All right, we're starting here, four lines from the bottom of Gimel Amud Bet. Amar Rav Yehuda Merav. Once again here, the Memra is brought over here, not because there's any thematic connection to the Memrot that we had before, but rather because we have a number of Memrot from Rav Yehuda, some of them in the name of Shmuel, some in the name of Rav. In each of these instances, Rav Kahana asks a question on it. And so because we have a similar genre of statement and question by Rav Kahana, they're all included here, even though thematically they're not connected. So Matkivla Rav Kahana. You have three log of mayim she'uvim that fell into them a kortov, which is 1/64 of a log, a very small portion of wine. Umarehen kemare yain. And then the water changes to have a color like that of wine. So the wine is influencing the color of the water. Venaflu the mikveh. And then they fall into the mikveh lo paslua. They don't make it pasul. So what we're speaking about here is a tanakanat chachamim, or really gzerat chachamim, that if you have shlosha lugim mayim, three log of mayim she'uvim that fall into a mikveh, that they are posel the mikveh. If the mikveh is arbaim sa'ah chaser shlosha lugim, it's made up of 40 sa'ah minus three log, and then these three log complete the mikveh, because these are three log that are not rainwater that came into the mikveh, but rather mayim she'uvim, drawn water by a person that's now being poured into the mikveh. So now when you pour those three log mayim into the mikveh, chachamim have a gzerah that it's posel the mikveh. Over here, the difference being that this is not just water, it's water that has become, quote-unquote, discolored by the wine that was added to it. So the question is, what's the status of that liquid that's now being put into the mikveh? Is it deemed to be mayim, water? And if it's deemed to be mayim, then it's mayim shu'uvim going into the mikveh to make up the 40 sa'ah. And in that case, it would be posel the mikveh. On the other hand, if it's deemed to be wine, it would not be posel the mikveh. It also would not be mashlim the mikveh because it's three log of yayin and not three log of mayim. So what we see here from the statement of Rav is that these three log of mayim that have some wine that fell into them and now are colored like wine, they do not have a status of water, and therefore, if they fall into the mikveh, lo paslu. So, matkifla Rav Kahana. So, Rav Kahana challenged that statement of Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav. Chima ben zeh, the meitzeva. Why is this any different than colored water? Most likely is something with a concentrate of dye in it, and they would use this to color bigadim or to use it for any type of dyeing that they wanted to do of items. Tanan, we have a Mishnah in Mikvaot. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Meitzeva poslimet em mikveh b'shlosh lugim. That when you have colored water, it affects the mikveh with three log. So you see from this that discoloration of the water does not change the fact that it is water. So when you have Meitzeva, shlosh lugim fall into the mikveh, they're posel the mikveh. Similarly, Rab's statement where you said you have water with wine added to it, and now it looks like wine, then that also should be posel the mikveh, because color should not have any impact in disqualifying it from being mayim. That's Rav Kahana's question or challenge to Rav Yehuda's statement in the name of Rav. Amalei Rava, hotam mayu detziva mikre, hachachamra meziga mikre. Well, look at the way that people term the liquid that we have here. When you're dealing with water that has color in it, that's exactly what they call it. They call it colored water. On the other hand, when you have wine that's mixed together with the water, they don't call that water wine. They call that diluted wine. The shame of the liquid is a wine, whereas the shame of the liquid when it comes to the dye is exactly that. It's colored water. So that's why by the water with the dye in it, that would be classified as water and therefore posel the mikveh. Whereas the water and the wine are not posel because that's called diluted wine. So the basis for Rav Kahana's question is very precarious, because if you look in the Mishnah in Mikvaot, in Perek Gimel, Mishnah Gimel, it actually spells out the difference that Rava is spelling out over here. And that is, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Meitzeva poslim oto b'shlosha lugim, ve'einan poslim oto b'shinui mareh. That Meitzeva affect the mikveh when they are three lugim, but they have no impact on it b'shinui mareh, in terms of changing the coloring. Nafal etocho yayin omochal, b'shinui et amareh, and they change the appearance, pasul, then it ruins it. So you see the Mishnah itself says that Meitzeva don't have an issue of discoloration and causing a problem of discoloration, whereas Yayin does. And that's exactly the chiluk that Rava makes. And if that's the case, what was Rav Kahana thinking in terms of his question from the Mishnah? So what you have to say is that there's a difference between discoloration of the mikveh, versus discoloration of the shlosha lugim mayim. The case in that Mishnah in Mikvaot is speaking about a case where the color affects not only the water, but it affects the entire mikveh. And what the Mishnah says is that Meitzeva have no impact on the mikveh, even though they change the coloring of the whole mikveh, though they are deemed to be water for shlosha lugim, and it would be posel b'mayim shuvim. On the other hand, by yayin, their wine, if it changes the appearance of the mikveh, it's posel the mikveh the gamre, because of the fact that it changes the mareh of the whole mikveh. But that's a din in the mikveh itself, where the mikveh has to have a din of mayim. On the other hand, the din of shlosha lugim is a gzera derabanan, that shlosha mayim shuvim are posel at the mikveh. Over there, maybe the mareh yayin, the fact that they look like wine, has no impact on the mayim shuvim, because when they're entered into the mikveh, they will be diluted by the whole mikveh, and it will look like water. So maybe over there, this gzerat ha-katuv, that the mar'eh of the mikveh must look like water, may not have application by the shlosha lugim themselves. And that's the nature of Rav Kahana's question, which is, yes, despite what the Mishnah says, but based on what I see from Meitzeva, by shlosha lugim mayim shluvim, where it says that color does not impact, and it's still considered to be mayim shluvim, I will say the same thing by yayin, that color shouldn't impact the shlosha lugim mayim shuvim. They'll still be deemed to be mayim shuvim, even though if they discolor the whole mikveh, they would not be that way. But for the shlosha lugim, it would be that way. And that's the nature of Rav Kahana's question. Gemara says, V'hatani Rabbi Chiya horidu et the mikveh. So didn't Rabbi Chiya say, in the case of Rav, that they were morid the mikveh, Rashi says over here, took it away from being kosher to being pasul? So you see that Rabbi Chiya thinks that this is problematic. Now this Rashi is extremely difficult because it suggests that we're dealing with a mikveh kasher that has shlosha lugim mayim shuvim that went into it, and that's what makes the psul over here. Which is very difficult because it basically aligns with the position of the Rashbam that is found in Baba Batra that we discussed over there on Daf Samach Vav, where the Rashbam says that mida oraita mayim shuvim are not posel a mikveh. And it's actually an explicit Mishnah in Mikvaot, in Perek Zayin, at the end of Mishnah Bed, where it says that even if a sa'ah of mayim shuvim falls in, and then you take out a sa'ah from there, it doesn't change the fact that the mikveh is kasher. And from there you see that mayim shuvim have no impact on a mikveh shalem. So why all of a sudden over here do you have shlosha lugim that are detrimental to a mikveh that is ksherah? So what the Rashbam says in Baba Batra is, that's midoraita. The din of the Mishnah is midoraita, mayim shuvim have no impact. The takanat chachamim, the gzerat chachamim is that three lugim of mayim shuvim are posel a mikveh, even though min haTorah none of this would be applicable. And that's how the Rashbam reads it, and he says then that all these cases where you have shlosha lugim going in, where the Mishnah is not explicit, can be even in cases where the mikveh is complete and is a full 40 sa'ah, still shlosha lugim will be posel. On the other hand, the majority of the Rishonim, the Beit Yosef actually paskins this way in Shulchan Aruch, and Rashi in Shabbat and Daf Tedvav actually seemingly indicates this way. If you look in the Pnei Yeshua on our Daf, he mentions this Rashi and says that he thinks that you have to read the Gemara in that context, which is Rashi says that the only time shlosha lugim mayim shuvim are posel is when the mikveh is chaser, when it has less than 40 sa'ah in it, then shlosha lugim mayim shuvim, the chachamim or gozer, are posel the mikveh, because not only do they not fill up the mikveh to the point that you need, they now prevent you from bringing in what would have made the mikveh into a mikveh ksherah of a 40 sa'ah. And based on that, the easiest way to read the Gemara over here is that even Rabbi Chiya and all the cases that we're speaking about here are speaking about cases where the mikveh is missing something from the 40 sa'ah, and then shlosha lugim are falling in there. And those shlosha lugim would then be posel the mikveh because it's not a mikveh kshera. But had it been a mikveh kshera, then if shlosha lugim mayim shuvim fell in, it would be kshera. And so we read the Gemara and we'll continue to read the Gemara based on those Rishonim. But just note that this Rashi makes it very difficult. And this Rashi aligns with that position or that yachid of the Rashbam that's found in Baba Batra, which isn't the majority view of the Rishonim. Amarovo lokasha harab Yochanan ben Nuri ha rabbonon. Depends on which Tana you are following. There are two different Tanaim, and the Machloket Tanaim will be played out in this Machloket basically between Rav and Rabbi Chiya as to whether the mikveh, when you have three log of water that has wine mixed in it that went into the mikveh, is that posel the mikveh or not posel the mikveh? The Tanan, shloshet lugim mayim chaser kurtov. So this is not like the case that we had before with Rav, because Rav's case is we already had three log of water, and then the wine was added on top of that. Over here, you don't have three log of mayim. you have less than three log of mayin, the deficit is a kortuv. Shenata letocham kortuv yayin. And what makes it up to the three log is a kortuv of yayin. Umarein kemare yayin. And their appearance is like that of wine. Benaflu the mikveh. They then fell into a mikveh. Lo paslu. In that case, it's not posel the mikveh. Bechein gimalugim mayim chaser kortuv. The same thing, if you have three log of mayim, that's missing a kortov, so there's a deficit in the three log. Shenafal letochan kortov chalav, that had in it a kortov of chalav that makes it up to the three log. Umareim kamerei mayim, and because milk is not such a deep color, so therefore it retains the color of water. Shenafalu the mikveh, and they fall into the mikveh, lo paslua, it's not posel at all. So as Rashi points out over here, the first two cases here in the Mishnah, you could have combined them. The deficit in both cases is the fact that you don't have three log of mayim. In both cases, you have chaser kortov. You're missing a kortov of water, and it's either being made up by yayin, or it's being made up by chalav. And since you don't have three log mayim, it's not going to be posel the mikveh because of the deficit. So truthfully, you could have combined the two together and given the same din. We'll see in a second in the Gemara maybe why it did not bring them together as a single locha. Or we could explain it based on Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's position where he will make a distinction that will have impact over here. So now, in this case, the Chachamim believe in both instances the mikveh is kasher, because you're lacking the three log of mayim. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri omer, hakol oleich achar hamareh. Everything goes after the appearance, which has both a chumra and a kula. The chumra is that if you have something that looks like water, then it'll be deemed to be water. On the other hand, the kula is that if it looks like wine, it's deemed to be wine. So in that case, if the water in the beginning were three log, but it has wine that is added to it, he would not be poselet. So in our case, it happens to be that there is a kortov missing from the shloshet lugei mayim, and then when you add in the wine to it, it doesn't change the fact that it's not going to be posel, because even the chachamim agree it's not going to be posel in that case, because you're missing the three log of mayim that you need. But for Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, even if it was a three log of mayim to start with, and then wine fell into it, since you're going after the mar'eh, after the appearance of the item, if wine fell into it, it would no longer be classified as water, and it would not be posel the mikveh. On the other hand, if it was chalav that fell in there, and it doesn't change the appearance of the water, then it would still be deemed to be water. And then, in our case here, and where you have a case where it's less than three log of mayim, and then the chalav makes up the additional amount, since it does look like water, it's deemed to be three log of water, and that would be a chumra on the side of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, that in that case it would classify as three log mayim, and it would be posel the mikveh. So according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, if you change the color, it'll be no good whether it is less than three log and that item is making up the three log, or whether it's above three log of mayim and then the item is added to it. If it's not colored like water, it's not water. And vice versa. If it is colored like water, then if you had less than three log mayim, but that item made it up to three log and it still looks like water, it'll be classified as water. And of course, if it's greater than three log, then putting in chalav is not going to make a difference because it doesn't change the color and still will be deemed as water. Whereas for the chachamim, you need to have three log of mayim, period. If you don't have three log of mayim, then it's not going to change anything. So in our case here, even if you add the chalav and now it looks like three log of mayim, that doesn't make a difference because there wasn't three log of mayim. As in the case that Rav brought before, where there are shlosha logim mayim, but they are discolored because they have the yain in them, whether you have wine or chalav that's added to it after the fact, doesn't matter because there's three log of mayim. So all they care about is, are there three log of mayim here or not three log of mayim over here? And then basically, Rabbi Chia, according to this, holds like the chachamim in the Mishnah, which is, once you have three log mayim, even if they have a different color to them, they are posel the mikveh. And that's why he was morid the mikveh in that case, Rabbi Chia. And that's also the explanation for Rabbi Yossi's position, which is meitzeva poslimit the mikveh b'shlosha lugim, because over there it's water. And then Rav will hold like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says it all goes after the appearance of the water. And that again is the kula and the chumra. So in our instance, where there were three log of mayim, and then there was wine put in afterwards, the fact that it changed the color, Menahu deems it that it's not considered to be water. And by the meitzeva, the reason it is posel the mikveh is because even though it's discolored, it still, as Rava says, has the shem mayim to it, and that shem mayim makes it as if it is mayim shu'uvim, and that's why it's posel the mikveh. Although you could potentially say now that since Rav holds like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, he can actually argue on that position of Rabbi Yossi, and he doesn't have to be aligned with that position of Rabbi Yossi anymore. Now Gemara says, Hami Bai, Baila Rav Papa. What you just said is a statement from Rava. Rav Papa actually asks as a question. The Bai Rav Papa, Rav Tani Chaser Korto Beresha? Aval Shlosha Lugim Latanakama Pasle? Vahad Rabbi Yochanan Memar Akol Aleich Achara Mare? Vrav Amar Rabbi Yochanan Menuri. And Rav holds like Rabbi Yochanan Menuri. Odilma! Or maybe Rav Lotani Chaser Korto Beresha. Maybe he doesn't have a Chaser Korto Beresha. Rabbi Yochanan Menuri, Ki Polig Aseifa, who the Polig? He only argues on the latter part. Rav Damar Kedivri Akol. And then Rav would hold like everyone. Our Mishnah, and this is what I noted for you before, that Rashi says, that the Mishnah is made up of two cases that the Rabbanim bring down. One case is you have water missing a kortov and then it's filled in by wine. And then you have water that's missing a kortov that's filled in by milk. Now the truth is you could have combined the two together and just say any water that's missing a kortov, no matter what you fill it in with, as long as it's not water, according to the Chachamim, that's not posel the mikveh. So why didn't they combine them together? I mentioned before that maybe further on the Gemara we'd understand that, and that is Rav Papa's question. Rav Papa's question is, how did Rav have the ratio of that Mishnah laid out? Does the Rav have the Mishnah laid out like the way we do now, which is that both the case of Yayin and the case of Chalav are Chaser Kortov, and the reasoning of the Chachamim is that you need to have 3 log mayim, it doesn't matter what you add to it, it doesn't make it into 3 log mayim, whereas Rabbi Yochanan Menuri thinks you go Kol Achara Mareh, everything goes after the appearance. And in that way, this is the way Rava explained Rav's position, Rav holds like Rabbi Yochanan Menuri that everything goes after the appearance, and even in a case where you have a 3 log of mayim, and then the yayim was added afterwards, if it discolors it, it won't disqualify the mikveh because of kol aleich achar mar'eh, and Rav holds like Rabbi Yochanan Menuri. Or, Rav Papa says, the other alternative is, in the first part of that Mishnah, instead of writing shloshet lugim mayim chaser kortov, rather it would be this, shloshet lugim mayim shenaflu letocham kortov yayin. It's exactly the same case that we have from Rav, and it's actually the way that it appears in the Mishnayot, the Mikvot, in Perek Zayin Mishnah Hey. It actually appears that the first case is a case where it does not say chaser kortov, which is that you have 3 log of mayim, and then wine fell into it and discolored it. Umarem kamera yayin. And that's what the Mishnah says, it appears like wine. Venaflu the mikveh, and they fall into mikveh, lo paslo. They do not ruin the mikveh. Which means that even the Tanakhama agrees that when you have discoloration of the water, it's not classified as water. And in that instance, Rav would believe that the Tanakhama or the Chachamim have 2 qualifications. One is that you have to have 3 log of mayim in order for it to be pasul, plus it has to look like mayim. So therefore, in this case, where you have 3 log mayim, but it's discolored because of the wine, it will not be posel the mikveh. And so then Rav can hold like the Tanakhama, and he'll also hold like Rabbi Yochanan Menuri, because everybody agrees when there's discoloration that that is not posel the mikveh. And Rabbi Yochanan Menuri only argues on the Chachamim's position in the Sefer, or basically, he's only the Chumrah and not the Kula. By the case of Chalav, where the Chachamim say it does not complete the 3 log mayim that you need when it was Chaser Kortov, he says it will fill it in because it looks like water, and everything goes after the Mareh. And he's only arguing on that Seifa case. So if you read the Mishnah that way, first of all, that explains why the Chalav and Yayin were separated from each other, because they're different cases. First case is without Chaser Kortov, and the second case is with Chaser Kortov, but then Rav could hold like Divrei HaKol, like everybody in the Mishnah, because even the Chachamim agree, when there is discoloration, then it doesn't disqualify the mikveh because it's not classified as water. Although, if you do set it up that way, you do run into a little of a problem, which is, then who does Rabbi Chiya hold like? Because Rav is now consistent both with the Chachamim, the Tanakhama, and the position of Yochanan Menuri, and therefore Rabbi Chiya has no Tana that he is holding like. The truth is that Rabbi Chiya is a Tana, so technically he could argue, but these are much earlier Tanaim, and we would expect him to likely take up one of the positions of these Tanaim, and not have a position that's against these Tanaim. So what you have to say is that Rav Papa didn't know the Braita with Rav Chiya in it. Had he known the Braita of Rav Chiya, he would have come to the conclusion that Rava did, which is that the Mishnah has both cases being Chaser Kortov, and that way Rav Chiya can hold like the Chachamim, and Rav can hold like Rabbi Yochanan Menuri. But Rav Papa was unaware of the Braita of Rav Chiya, asked the question as to whether Rav holds just like Rabbi Yochanan Menuri, or he holds also like the Tanakhama, and that would depend on how he had the Lashon HaMishnah laid out, whether the first case had Chaser Kortov or did not have Chaser Kortov in it. So Gemara answers, Ein Ochanami, Rav Papa mi Bayile. Rav Papa was a question. The Rava, Pshitale. But for Rava, it was straightforward. Rava assumed that that was the breakdown in the Mishnah, that it was both cases chaser kortov, and therefore you could explain the machloka between Rav and Rabbi Chia. Although Rabbi Akiva Eger is mdayik from Rashi's statement over here, the Rav of Pshitalei, that he says, Rav kopid nami achazuta. The Rav is also makpid on the appearance, which means that he requires both things, the shlosha lugim, and the appearance be that of mayim, which in essence then is interesting, makes him like that side of Rav Papa that Rav holds like Divrei HaKol. So it's interesting that he thinks that that way Rashi viewed Rav's position within Rava is similar to the way that would have been Divrei HaKol, and in that way, Rav only holds like Rav Yochanan ben Nuri the Kula. So that does leave you in a bind as to how did Rashi know that that was the case. On the other hand, Rav Papa wasn't certain about that, and now we know that probably his uncertainty derives from the fact that Rav Papa wasn't aware of the Braita of Rabbi Chia. And since he didn't know about the Braita of Rav Chia, he could set Rav as being either Divrei HaKol or, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. But once you know the Braita of Rabbi Chia, which Rav was aware of, then you would have to say that Rav only holds like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri in order for Rabbi Chia to have someone he holds like. Now the Gemara says, I'm Rav Yosef, lo shmili hashmatata. Rav Yosef says, I didn't hear anything about this. I'm a Talmid of Rav Yehuda, and I didn't hear him say anything over in the name of Rav that suggested that if you have three log of Mayim and then wine got mixed into it, that that wouldn't be posel the mikveh. Amar Abaye, at amart la nihalan, v'hachi amart nihalan. Abaye says, first of all, you did say this over. And number two, this is what you said to us in the name of Rav. If you remember, Rav Yosef fell ill in the middle of his life, and he forgot everything he had learned, and then he had to go back and relearn everything again. So his Talmid Abaye, many times we find in Shas, reminds Rav Yosef of what he had said before he fell ill. So over here, Rav Yosef says, I don't remember saying anything over in the name of Rav Yehuda like this. And Abaye says, yes, you did. You told us this, and this is what you said in the name of Rav. Lo tani chaser korto bereisha, that he did not have a chaser korto bereisha, Rabbi Yochanan a seifa polig, and Rabbi Yochanan's only argue on the seifa, Rav da marka divrei HaKol, and therefore Rav holds like everyone. So that would be then the other side of the way to learn. Rav Papa has a safek as to how to learn the Mishnah. Rav learns it that both cases are chaser kortov, and now you have Rabbi Yosef telling us that the first case was not chaser kortov, and the second case was chaser kortov. V'am Rav Yehuda Marav. So now we have another memra from Rav Yehuda Marav. Chavit mleya mayim shenafla leyam agadol. If you have a barrel that's full of water, mayim she'uvim, that fell into the Mediterranean, hatovel sham. Someone who goes to the mikveh in that location, lo altolo tvila. That tvila is not successful. That is not a good tvila. The problem is, chayshinan l'shlosha lugim shelo yehei b'makom echad. We're afraid that when you went to the mikveh right there where that barrel had dumped out, that in that location there will be three logi of mayim shuvim together in that location, and three log of mayim shuvim are posel the adam. That's one of the takanot that we have in the Gemara in Shabbat, that if a person goes into mayim shuvim, that they become tamei. Rashi says over here, Shema bazeh roshov rubo mamayim shuvim, v'zeh achad min haposlim et ha-truma. It's one of those takanot that is posel de truma that we have in the first parak in Shabbat, when they discuss the takanot that they put in place with regards to tuma. And so one of those is that if Rosh Rubo comes into mayim shuvim. So the fear is that the barrel that emptied out over there, when he goes to the mikveh in that same location, he's going into the mayim shuvim and not into the Mediterranean itself. Aval, v'davka v'yam agadol. It's only true when you're in the Mediterranean, the kai v'kaima, because the waters are very still, and the water does not disperse quickly. Aval narab alma, if you're dealing with a river, lo. That's not the case, because the river is flowing. So whatever mayim shuvim were poured in, the river is taken down river already, and now when you're going to the mikveh in the river, you're definitely going into a location that does not have mayim shuvim. That is Rashi's explanation for why there is a problem over here. The Baal HaYom Tosafot raised a very significant issue with Rashi's pshat, and that is we know, based on what we said before, that if you have a functioning mikveh that is kasher, then when you add in mayim shuvim to that mikveh, through hashaka, they become joined with the mikveh waters, and then they are batel to the mikveh waters, as if they are kulo mikveh kasher. That's actually how we today create our mikvaot, which is that we keep a bore that has the arba'im sa'ah, and every time we refill the mikvaot through hamshacha, we take that mayim and we make a hashaka, we open up a pipe between that and the bore, and that makes it into a mikveh kasher. So why over here, when you have mayim she'uvim that now fall into the ocean, which is a kosher mikveh, why aren't they classified as now being a kosher mikveh through hashaka? If that's the case, it makes no sense that your tevilah here is not considered to be a good tevilah. For that reason, the Balei HaTosafot over here changed the girsa in our Gemara and say, Lekach nirad de gassina b'milte de Rabbi Yehuda, that within Rabbi Yehuda's memra, chavit mle'a yayin, that it is actually a barrel full of wine and not of water. Wine doesn't have a din of hashaka. When wine falls into a mikveh, it remains wine. It's not batel to the mikveh. And that's the problem over here. You have wine instead of water. Tosafot then goes on to explain that it has to be white wine and not red wine, because if it was red wine, you just look at the discoloration and you'd know whether you're in the yayin or not. But with white wine, which is the same color as the water, you wouldn't know if you were going to the mikveh in the ocean or whether you're going to the mikveh in the wine. And that's how the Tevilah Tosafot deal with it. And in that way, it actually makes more understandable the upcoming piece of the Gemara, which brings a braita that actually has a case that involves yayin instead of mayim. Although the Ramban, in explaining Rashi, says that the case here is not that he was going to the mikveh in waters that were not mikveh waters. Rather, our issue is that when he went to the mikveh here in the sea, and then he was coming out of the sea, that he might have touched this water on his way out. And their problem here is one of the 18 things, the Yudchet Davar, that were nigzar in the Gemara and Shabbat that make a person tamei for truma. And that's what Rashi is saying. The problem is on the way out, maybe he became tamei again. The Ramban rejects that for a number of reasons, one of which is, the Gemara here says, lo alto lo tvila, which sounds like the tvila didn't work at all. And number two is, it shouldn't have said, lo alto lo tvila, but simply the mifsil pasil et the truma, that he simply makes the truma pasul. For that reason, the Ramban thinks that that is not the proper way to explain it. And therefore he offers an alternative, which is the fear here, is that since the waters don't disperse properly, then when the person goes into the mikveh of the sea, it's possible that one of his body parts didn't get into the ocean or the sea, but was rather inside of these mayim she'uvim. But that does rest upon what the Gemara says, which is that the waters here remain separate, and that's based on what's quoted in the name of Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan, that the waters of the mayim she'uvim that get poured over here, which are sweet waters, don't mix into the ocean or the sea waters so quickly. That's either because they are fresh water versus salt water, or because of the fact that the salt water itself, which is denser, causes the fresh water to float on top and remain separate. Rabbi Moshe Darshan says that in context of it being a problem of the gzeira of the Yud Chet Davar, the Ramban says no, it's a more fundamental problem that maybe you didn't get into the mikveh completely because part of your body was in this water. And that would explain, number one, why it only says Shlosha Lugim over here, because the problem is not about the gzeira Yud Chet Davar, Rosh Ruba B'mayim, but rather the problem over here is a problem that you didn't get fully into the mikveh, as well as the fact that why this is only problematic for an Adam Tamei and not for any person. The way that you're explaining it, that's a problem that you have one of the Yud Chet Davar, even a person who's Tahor that went there would become Tamei because of the waters that there. You don't need someone to be Tamei. So that's how the Ramban gets around that problem by explaining it in this manner. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a brayta that supports that. Chavit Melea Yayin, Shinafla de Yamagadol. You have a barrel full of wine that fell into Yamagadol. Hatovel Sham, Lo Alta Lo Tvila. Then, if he gives to the mikveh there, the Tvila does not work. Chashin and Lashlosha Lugim Shuvim, Shlo Yebe Makom Echad. We're worried about three lug of water that was drawn in a single location. V'chein kikar shel truma shenafalal sham, and also a loaf of truma that fell into that location, tamei, it becomes tamei. So here the chalav truma that now touches the yayin that is there, maybe that yayin is tamei because the person was tamei. And when he went in there, maybe he never became tahor because he never went into the mikveh, he never went into the sea. He only ended up in the yayin, and he remained tamei, and he made the yayin tamei. And in making the yayin tamei, then the yayin now is mitamei, the loaf of the truma. Now, in the case of the bright over here, both Rashi and Balei HaTosafot believe that it is because of the yayin that's there. And that explains why the loaf of bread became tamei, because it touched the yayin that became tamei. On the other hand, the Ramban here says that there was an earlier girsa that actually said that it was mayim and not yayin. And that Rashi actually changed the girsot of the Gemara. Ramban doesn't really understand why Rashi changed it from mayim to yayin, because that would be directly supportive of the previous memra of Rabbi Yehuda Amarav. Elim Kane, that he had that girsa in the Tosefta, which is the girsa that we see in the Tosefta, as well as the girsa of the Rabbeinu Chananel. But then you'd still have the difficulty explaining why the loaf of truma is made tamei by those waters. So in the Rambam, he suggests that it is because there's a gzeira of Maim Shuvim, but the Meiri explains, and this seems more likely, that the waters that fell there were Mayim Tmeim, that they're actually waters that were Tmei, and that's why they affect the Truma that goes through them. But the Ramban then goes on to suggest maybe the problem here, because even if you suggest that the waters are Tmeim, maybe Rashi thinks that you accomplish Hashaka, even though that wasn't your intention over here, and then the waters become Tehorim, and it won't affect the Truma. And therefore he changed it to Yayin, so that it would be something that becomes Tmei. But if you don't think there is such a concept of Hashaka, like the Meiri suggests over here, then the Mayim Tmeim could be what made this Chalash Shel Truma Tmei'ah. So my v'chein, why is the bright to say v'chein? Ma would have tamed, I would have thought that the muki gavra chaskei. So achi uka trumach al cheska. The reason that we say that the guy is tamei is because beforehand he was tamei. So now you go into the mikveh and you have a safek whether he became tahor or not. You remain in your status that you were before. We keep the status quo in place because of the safek. And the chazaka is that you were tamei. So you don't change that. But with regards to the truma was tehora beforehand. So now you want to make it tamei mipas safek? So we wouldn't say that. We'd be mukim achazka. We'll put on the chazaka that the truma was tohora before and leave it in place. Kamash malan, that we don't say that. And we assume that because of the safek over here, the safek makes the truma tmei'ah, just like the safek does not allow the person to become tahor. It has nothing to do with their previous status. It has to do with the safek as to whether we think the person went to the mikveh. So now, over here again, like you're asking, the case is somewhat difficult because the assumption is that the waters or the wine would stay still in the Mediterranean. Now there are times of the year when the Mediterranean is much more still, but the assumption has to be that you went in there immediately after it fell in a case where it doesn't have enough time to disperse quickly. By a river, by definition, it won't be there no matter how quickly you go in there because of the flow of the river. In the ocean where the flow of the water is much less dramatic, it moves slightly rocks back and forth, but it doesn't move dramatically like the way that a river does. It takes more time for it to disperse. And so then the question is, if you jump in immediately after it's spilled there, are you jumping into the sea? Or are you jumping into whatever has been poured or left over there? Alright, next Mishnah. Me'idim anu b'ish ploni, shechayav l'chavero ma'itayim zuz. So here you have Edim that come along and testify about someone that he owes 200 zuz. B'nim se'u zomimim. And then they are incriminated as Edim zomimim. You have other Edim come along and say, yimanu ayitem. Then lokim u'mishalmim. They get both malkot, as well as the fact that they have to pay kasher zaman lasot. Like they wanted to cause this person a loss of money, they also have to pay that money. Shelo ha'shem me'mivyan li'dei makot, me'mivyan li'dei tashlumim. Because it's not the same lav that causes the malkot as the lav that causes them to have to make payment. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That is the position of Rabbi Meir, because the pasuk that makes you chayav malkot, according to Rabbi Meir, is lo taneh b'reacha eid shaker. You lied as eidim. And since you lied, now you get malkot for lying as eidim. Besides that, you have kasher zamam lasod le'achiv, eidim zomimim. You have to do to them like they were trying to do to the victim. And since they were trying to cause him a loss of money, he also pays money. So he says you have two different lavim. One of them gives you malkot, one of them forces payment. And therefore these eidim zomimim get both. They'll have to get malkot, and they'll also have to make payment. So that is the view of Rashi, but both the Balei HaTosfot and the Ramban over here say, why does it make a difference that there are one shame or two shemot with regards to whether you get one punishment or two punishment? The question is simply, can you have two punishments or not have two punishments? Why is there any difference between them? Proves this from the fact that Rabbi Meir, in the instance of Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho, actually has you be chayav both for malkot and compensation in that situation. The Balei HaTosafot reject that explanation and say, maybe that's not a proof that he would say the same thing by Shem Achat, because of the fact that the compensation over there is different than the compensation we find over here. What Tosafot says is that in the cases where the payment is restitution, then you can have Malkot and payment. Because the payment is not a punishment, it's a compensation for the Nezek that you did. So in that case, you can both have Malkot and compensation. Over here by Edim Zomimim, the payment is certainly not compensation or restitution because you were not successful at doing it. It's Kasher Zamam Lasod Le'achiv. So over here, the payment is not for restitution or Nezek that you did. It's because of Kasher Zamam. So then you're dealing with two punishments for the same violation that they did over here. So you can't look at it as one big punishment. You have to look at it. It's two separate punishments. So the Balei HaTosafot answer in one of two ways. The first way the Balei HaTosafot suggests that when you have two psukim that are indicating two different punishments, then in that instance you can't say that one pasuk overrides the other pasuk. If they come from a shem achat, then you can say that one punishment fulfills the pasuk and you're done with it. But when it comes to two shemot, that's not an issue. They bring an alternate explanation that is in the name of Rav Meir Burbugani, who suggests that the need for payment does not require an azhara. And since the need for payment does not require an azhara, then the azhara is available to give you malkot. But if you didn't need an azhara, then you would have here an azhara for the edim zomamim, and then the punishment would be azitim lo kasher zomam lasod da'achiv, and then it would be all taken up with the compensation. Now that you don't need the azhara because it's all about compensation, then that azhara is now available to give malkot. And so that's how the Balei Tosafot in the end learn the shita of Rabbi Meir. The Ramban, on the other hand, sees shita Rabbi Meir having to do with whether you use lo taneh b'recha eid shakar to be an azhara for edim zomamim or not. Question which the Gemara is going to bring at the end of today's daf, which is, what is the azhara for edim zomamim? For the Chachamim, it's lo taneh b'recha eid shakar. Therefore, it's not available to give malkot, because it's used as an azhara for the punishment that's given by Asitim lo kasher zomam lasod da'achiv. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir believes that comes from, we'll see later in today's daf, lo yosipu od, and for that reason he has the lav available to give malkot. Lastly, the Meiri suggests over here, and we saw this back on daf bet amud bet, that the lav lo taneh b'recha eid shakar is a lav she'ein bo maaseh. And Rabbi Meir believes that a lav she'ein bo maaseh lokin a lav. And that's how the Meiri believes that Rabbi Meir gives malkot over here, whereas the Chachamim don't give malkot for this because it's a lav she'ein bo maaseh. We saw back already on daf bet amud bet the view of the Balei Tosafot and the Ramban, that when it comes to lav she'ein bo maaseh or lav she'nitan azarat mitat beitin, you're right. Lo taneh b'recha eid shakar would not then give you malkot, but because you have the pasuk of itztigu et tzadik v'irshu et harasha, that pasuk teaches that there are malkot by edim zomamim, and they, unlike the Meiri, don't see that being a din in edim zomamim, but rather now backing onto lo taneh b'recha eid shakar and telling you that you could have gotten malkot for lo taneh b'recha eid shakar if it were not for the fact that the Chachamim have a different view over here. And that view is, Chachamim omrim, kol mishalem, eino lokeh. Anybody who pays doesn't get malkot. The reason being because the pasuk says, kedei rishato, that you punish him based on his evilness or the bad thing that he did. And the Gemara darshans from that, risha achat ata mechaivo, vi ata mechaivo mishem shtei rishayot. That you're allowed to punish him once for the violation and not twice for the same violation. But then you have a fair question, which is, how do you determine which one is the right punishment? You have two punishments over here, malkot and money. How do you know that the money trumps and not the malkot? So Rashi notes for you that we learned back in Masechet Ketubot, why don't we say, kol loke einu mishalem, give him malkot and he won't have to pay, and then they'll get malkot instead of paying. Mishanina beferish ribta Torah idim zomamim letashlumim. And he says, the Gemara in Ketubot says that the Torah specifically says that idim zomamim have to pay, and how they know that, the limud is over there. But since Edim Zomim have to pay, by definition, if they're going to pay, they're not going to be subject to Malkot, because you can't punish them twice for the same violation. And since their punishment is monetary right now, or compensation, they're not going to get Malkot, because you can't give them both. Whereas for the Meiri that we mentioned before, the reason the Chachamim believe that you don't get Malkot over here is because it's a Lav She'ein Bo Maaseh, and therefore there are no Malkot for it. The Ramban, on the other hand, sees the reason the Chachamim believe that you don't get Malkot over here is for lo taneh b'recha eid shakar, because it's used as an azhara for the punishment that's given by asitim lo kasher zomam lasod da'achiv. Therefore, it's not available to give Malkot. And both for the Meiri and the Ramban, as the Ritva notes, you're going to have to say that when the Gemara says that the tour comes from kedei rishato, that's just the Ravcha de Milto, and that's not the Iker reason as to why the Chachamim think you are patur. So now the Mishnah brings another case. They're testifying about someone, whatever violation it is, that he's chayav malkot. And once again, these edim are found to be edim zomamim. Someone, instead of edim, come along and say, you couldn't have said that. Lokim shmonim. You get 80 malkot. Mishom lo taneh b'recha eid shakar. Umishom asidim lo kasher zomam. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Chachamim Ramim, Eino Lokim El Arba'im. You only get 40 Malkot. As to why the Chachamim say you are Patur over here, we had before Kedei Rishato, but Kedei Rishato really only helps you with regards to Malkot and Tashlumim. But when it comes to Malkot and Malkot, like the case in the latter half of the Mishnah, then Kedevi Shato doesn't help you, as Tosafot says in other places, two sets of Malkot are not a problem with Kedevi Shato, and we have examples of that in the Mishnayot and the Gemarot throughout Shas, where a person can be, through one action, be in violation of multiple lavin. So we don't see multiple malkiot as being a problem when it is kedei rishato. So now you have to come up with a different explanation as to why the chachamim over here say that you only get one set of malkot. Now for the me'iri, that's easy to explain because lotanei b'recha eitzaker is a lav shein bo maaseh, and therefore you don't get malkot. But for the Baal Tosfot and the Ramban, who believe that Edim Zomamim, Hitzdikra Tzadik, teach you that Lotanei Berecha Chakra can get overcome all of those deficits, then why shouldn't the Chachamim also give you Malkot over here? So in the, here, even the Baal Tosafot will have to agree to the position of the Ramban, that the Chachamim think that this is an Azhara over here, and that is the deficit as to why you don't get double Malkot over here, is because it's an Azhara, and not a lav that's available to give Malkot. And from this you see that the Chachamim don't view these lavin as being two separate lavin, rather to be a combined single lav. And that might have influence over here, how do you view Rabbi Meir's position versus the Chachamim, and that actually have to do with what we said back on Bet Amud Bet, which is that the Gemara rejected giving Malkot for Lotanei Berecha Eitzaker because it was a lav she'ein bo maaseh, that it doesn't have any maaseh associated with it, therefore there's no Malkot associated with it. And we noted over there a machloket in the Rishonim as to whether the reason you get Malkot is because of Vasitim lo kasher zamam nasot achiv, that's the source of the Malkot, or the way the Ramban formulated it was, and Tosafot says something along those lines, which is that Vasitim lo kasher zamam nasot achiv teaches you that despite the fact that it is a lav shein bo maaseh, we still give you Malkot for Lotanei Berecha Eitzaker. So Gemara says, Bishlam ol Rabbanon kedei rishato k'tiv. Rabbanon's position as to why you're not loke mishalem makes sense, is because we have kedei rishato. So you get punished for one punishment, and you're not going to get multiple punishments over here. But according to Rabbi Meir, my taima, what's Rabbi Meir's reasoning that he says you can't have malkot and a monetary penalty over here? So the truth is that Rabbi Meir does use the word kedei rishato to teach you that you can't have Malkot and Mita together. So he does have a drusha for Kedei Rishato. And so Baal HaTosafot, see, this part of the Gemara is an additional question on Rabbi Meir, because we see that he does darshan Kedei Rishato, and if he darshans Kedei Rishato, why don't we apply it to say that you're also not loka in Mishalem? What is the reason that he thinks Kedei Rishato is only about Malkot and Mita, and not about getting Malkot and also having to pay at the same time? Amarula, gomar mi motzi shemra. They learn it from motzi shemra. Ma motzi shemra, loke umishalem. Here an individual casts aspersions on the woman he's married as to whether she was a bitula when he married her. Then he's found out to be lying about that. He first of all has to make payment to the father of this girl who was maligned. And in addition to that, he gets malkot because the pasuk says vayisru oto, that they will punish him with malkot. Over there you get both malkot and you have to make compensation. Av kol loke mishalem. We'll use that as a paradigm, and it'll be a binyan av that anywhere you have malkot and tashlumim, then you do both of them. It says, how can you prove from that? Mala motzi shemra shekein knas. Motzi shemra is a knas and not compensation. Because he didn't cause any loss over here, there's no reason for him to be paying money. Now, if you say the money is compensation for maybe the embarrassment or the busha, the amount of money that he has to pay to the father of this daughter is fixed. The fact that it is a fixed payment already indicates that it's not about busha, which is a variable type of compensation. Or you could argue that possibly the malkot by motzi shemra is actually a knas, because the malkot are not about violating a lav, but rather about the behavior of this individual. And the terminology the Torah uses is v'yisru oto, that Beit Din will put him in place for his misbehavior over here, not necessarily because he violated a lav. So savala ki Rabbi Akiva, he holds like Rabbi Akiva, damar edim zomamim knasahu. Like we saw in yesterday's daf, that Rabbi Akiva believes that edim zomamim are knas, and therefore modeh b'knas is patur by the case of edim zomamim. And so he'll hold like Rabbi Akiva, and therefore he can use the paradigm of motzi shemra to teach you about edim zomamim, that when you have malkot and a knas, you can pay both of them. Now, as the Baal HaTosafot point out over here, that this idea of loke and mishalem, which the Gemara now is bringing in the context of being a knas, that is not the limit of Rabbi Meir's opinion. Rabbi Meir's opinion is that you do are loke mishalim even when it's not a knas, and vice versa. The position of the chachamim is not just that by edim zomamim and by loke mishalim of regular monetary matters there is a problem of kedei bishato, but by knas they would agree with Rabbi Meir. Bali Tosafot go out of their way to show that their positions are consistent, that Rabbi Meir believes you're always loke mishalim, whether it's knas, whether it is regular monetary matter. And on the other hand, the chachamim believe no matter whether it is regular monetary case or it's knas, kedei rishato comes and eliminates the payment. And that's because kedei rishato is found by edim zomamim. So Rabbi Meir thinks it's a knas. You'll learn from there that there is no payment by knas. And then he uses kedei rishato to teach you about malkot and mita. And in doing so, he has nothing available then to exclude the case of regular tashlum and malkot. And that's why he says you're chayav. And on the other hand, the chachamim who think that edim zomamim are regular mamon, so then when it says kedei rishato, it's telling you that in a monetary case, you can't have both of those punishments, not malkot and tashlumim. And that's because there's no reason to limit it to mamon, because there's no definition of what the rishato are over there, and that would mean whether it's mamon or it's knas. Some bring this member of Ula on a different situation completely. Over here, Ula was trying to answer for us, why is it Rabbi Meir believes that you're loke mishalim? He says, we learn it out of the paradigm of Motzi Shemra. So that's how he answered on behalf of Rabbi Meir. Now, the Gemara says that some say that that statement of Ula, that we learn it out of Motzi Shemra, was said on this, the Tanya, lo tuturu mimenu ad boker, but dar mimenu ad boker, ba'esh tisrofu. There's a requirement not to leave korbanot over past their time. If you do leave over the korban past its time, there's a requirement that you burn whatever was left over. The Torah prescribes for you a positive commandment after the violation of the negative commandment. Lomar, she'en lokim alav di Rabbi Yehuda. To teach you, you don't get malkot for it. That is the view of Rabbi Yehuda. What Rabbi Yehuda says, and everybody agrees to this, which is, alav anitak li'asei. If you have a negative precept that leads to a positive rectification, then you don't get malkot, because the Torah gives you the prescription of what to do when you violate the law. Here, the law is, don't leave it over. And then the Torah says, if you do leave it over, you burn it. So the Torah prescribes for you what the rectification of the law is. If you violate the law, here's the assay to fix it. So based on that, a law and itak the assay is not subject to malkot. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't get malkot for leaving it over because it's a law and itak the assay. Rabbi Kiva Omer, lo min ha-shem huzeh. That's not the real reason why. Ela mishum dabalei lav shem bo maaseh. Chol lav shem bo maaseh in lokin alav. The real reason that you don't get malkot for lo totiru is because it is a passive violation. You don't actively violate lo totiru. Lo totiru means simply you did not consume the korban before the deadline. And now, by Sheva Alka said, by doing absolutely nothing, the Korban now passes by its deadline. So your violation of Lototira Menu at Boker is a passive violation, and you don't get Malkot when it's a Lav She'im Bo Maaseh, because as we discussed already on the first daf, we learn out Malkot for Lototachsom Shor B'Disho, and Lototachsom Shor B'Disho is an active violation. That becomes the paradigmatic law to tell us when you get malkot. And since this is not an active violation, you don't get malkot. Michlau, the Rabbi Yehuda Savar, lav shem bo maaseh, lo ken alav. From there you would conclude that Rabbi Yehuda thinks that a lav shem bo maaseh you do get malkot for, and that's why he had to come to another conclusion as to why you don't get malkot there, which is lav ani tak b'yaseh. Menalei, how does he know a lav shem bo maaseh gets malkot? Amruma gomar mimotzi shemra. In this version of the Gemara, this is where Ula comes in, versus where we had it before, about our Mishnah. Over here, the Gemara says that Ula's statement was made about Rabbi Yehuda's position that you get malkut for lav shem bo maaseh. Because, gomar mimotzi shemra. Ma motzi shemra lav shem bo maaseh lokin alav. By motzi shemra, the husband didn't do anything active to violate the isur. He simply went to Beit Din and said, Lo matza betulim liishti. I didn't find my wife to be a betula. So through his words, he did it. It was not an active violation. Right, we dealt with this in the Gemara and Sanhedrin as to where akimat svatav is considered to be a maaser or not. So it is a machloket tanaim. So clearly he holds like those tanaim that believe that it's not enough of a maaser to be deemed that you're actively violating over here. And nevertheless, he gets malkot for that, because it says vayisru oto. That we learn out from a gzeres shava to ben sorer umoreh, that vayisru oto, that you get malkot. And then they learn out ben to edim zomamim to teach you that you get malkot. Av kol lav she'im bo maaseh lo ken alav. This should be paradigmatic in nature. Anytime you have a lav that has a passive violation, you still should get malkot for it. Now, the Bali Tosafot say, based on that, why didn't Rabbi Meir learn out Edim Zomamim from Motzi Shemra? And then you wouldn't need to have Hayyam bin Hakota Rasha by Edim Zomamim. The answer is because the source for the fact that you get Malkot by Motzi Shemra is from Edim Zomamim. And therefore you can't say that Edim Zomamim should be learned from Motzi Shemra, when the whole point is that Motzi Shemra learns through these Gezerut Shavot from Edim Zomamim that you do get Malkot. Sumer says, Mala Motzi Shemra Shken Loke Umishalem. Wait, how can you bring that as a paradigm? Motzi Shemra is already an unusual case, because you give Malkot and you pay. So you see that Motzi Shemra is already a Chiddush in the fact that you give two punishments, then maybe it's also a Chiddush that you give Malkot for a Lav Shem Bomasa. Elam Reish Lakish Gamar Mi Edim Zomamim. Rabbi Yehuda learns it out of Edim Zomamim. Mala Edim Zomamim Lav Shem Bomasa. Again, by Edim Zomamim, all you did was testify in court. There's no action that you took. Nevertheless, Lokin Alav, you do get Malkot in certain instances, either in the case where you're trying to cause the person to get Malkot, or in a case like Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, where you'll get Malkot. Avko Lav, Shem Bo Masa, Lokin Alav. Problem is, Malim Zomim, Shekein, Ein Tzrichim Hatra'ah. Edim Zomim is also an unusual case, because we don't give them any warning. There's no Hatra'ah by Edim Zomim. The problem is, basically, you physically, there's no time that you could give them Hatra'ah. You don't know that they're Edim Zomamim at the time they testify. So the time they testify, how could you warn them before they testify, don't be Edim Zomamim, if you have no idea whether they're Edim Zomamim, because the other witnesses only come later. And if you say, okay, we'll just give them, every witness that comes up, we'll give them a warning about not being Edim Zomamim, that is Hatrat Safek. And since it's Hatrat Safek, it doesn't work. So because of that, we can't give them Hatra'ah, and so Edim Zomamim are not subject to Hatra'ah. So once again, it's a unique case, and you can't extrapolate from it. Mar says, Motzi Shemra Yochiach. Now you'll learn that out from Motzi Shemra V'chazer Adin. And now you'll take the common denominator between Motzi Shemra and Edim Zomamim. Lo Reizeh Kereizeh, V'lo Reizeh Kereizeh. The Edim Zomamim are not like Motzi Shemra, and Motzi Shemra is not like Edim Zomamim. Meaning that the Chumra of Motzi Shemra, which is Loke Umishalem, is not by Edim Zomamim. And the Chumra of Edim Zomamim, which is you don't need Hatra'ah, is not by Motzi Shemra. So what we'll do is, at Tzadeh Shavesh Ben, the common denominator between them is Lav Shem Bomase, they're a Lav that has no action, Velokin Alav, and you get Malkot. Avko Lav Shem Bomase, Lokin Alav. So from that, we will create a Binyan Av, a Tzadeh Shavesh, which teaches us that anytime you have a Lav Shem Bomase, you still get Malkot. Mala Tzadeh Shavesh Ben Shein Knas. Wait a minute, there is a common denominator, Chumra, between them, which is they're both penalties. They're not compensation in the fact that they're real compensation, they're both penalties to start with. And so maybe you can't extrapolate because they're both penalties and that's why they have this unique din. Halokasha, Rabbi Yehuda lo sover like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold like Rabbi Akiva. So now, if you do that, then you don't have that common denominator between Edim Zomamim and Motzi Shemra. Motzi Shemra is a Knas, Edim Zomamim is not a Knas. And so then you'll drop the Knas issue because both of them get Malkot, but they don't have the same Chumrot. Wait a minute, maybe there is a common denominator between them which have the fact in common that they both have something that's a chumra by them. Edim Zomamim had the lack of Hatra'ah, and the Motzi Shemra has the fact that either it's a knas, or the fact that it is loke umishalem. So both of them have a tzad chumra, maybe that's why you get Malkot for Lav Shem Bomase. It says, Rabbi Yehuda tzad chumra lo parich. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't think that that's enough of a reason to undermine a tzad shaveh shebehen. As Rashi notes over here, ho v'chumra shel zeh, eino chumro shel zeh, since the chumrot are not the same, ein tama malkot toloi bo. It's clear that that's not the reason for the malkot being given here, because they don't share in common the same chumra. So even though they both have a chumra, it's not a shared chumra. And so therefore you have to look at the common denominator. Common denominator is a lav shem bo maase, and they get malkot. And that's the reason that you get malkot over here, and from that you can extrapolate to all lavim that don't have a maase, that you'll get malkot. Rabbanan. Hi, Lotane Berechai Chakar, Mar Darshibe. What do they do with Lotane Berechai Chakar? How we violate Lazhara, Ledim Zomamim. They use that as a warning for Edim Zomamim to tell you that you will get a punishment of the Edim Zomamim. Rabbi Meir, Azhara, Ledim Zomamim, Minole. So then where does Rabbi Meir get that Azhara from? Because in order to punish someone, you need the Torah to say, don't do this. And then if you do this, you'll get the punishment. Vasitem lo kasher zamam lasot de'achiv is the punishment that one would be given. Where is the warning not to engage in such behavior? So Chachamim say that derives from lo taneh b'riacha eid shaker. So once you've done that, you've now made it into an azhara, it leads to an onesh, and therefore you won't get malkot independently for it, because the punishment is stated in vasitem lo kasher zamam lasot de'achiv. And so that's really the reason behind the Chachamim's position over here, is that lo taneh b'riacha eid shaker is really used for a different reason. You can't give malkot for it because it itself is the azhara. And then the Gemara says, well, Rabbi Meir, azhara le'edim zomrim minolet. Where's his azhara? Where's the restriction? Rabbi Meir, nafkalei mina nisharim yishme'u v'yirau v'lo yusifu ot. He learns it out from the pasuk, ba'edim zomrim, it say that those that remain behind, meaning that the Am as a whole, they will listen and they will fear, v'lo yusifu ot, and then they won't any longer engage in this behavior. Rabbanan, how mi ba'ilei l'achroza. V'lo yusifu ot, that pasuk teaches you they have to announce it, that you have to do it in a public way. So we discussed this in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, whether they had to wait to the regel and then do this in the regel because everybody was there. It was enough that they execute him now, but they send out letters or they send out in public notices that the reason he's being executed is because he was an Eid Zomim. So here you need that for the Achraza. Rabbi Meir, Achraza mi yishme'u v'yirau nafka. There are two parts of the pasuk. It says, v'anisharim yishme'u v'yirau. That's the requirement that there be a Achraza. And that was one of the proofs that you could do it this way because it says yishme'u. They will hear and fear. It doesn't say they will see and fear. So that was the reasoning behind the one who said that you can do this by sending out public notices and you don't have to do it where it's done in a public venue like the regel. But that's learned out Yishmael Ve'iro. The loyos if you owed, that's the law according to Rabbi Meir. You should not engage in this behavior any longer. The fact that the Torah says don't engage in this behavior, that's the warning for Edim Zomim. The Chachamim on the other hand see that whole pasuk dealing with the Hachraza. And don't see the Yosifuot as being the lav, the azhara, and therefore they use Lotan Ebrecha Eid Shoker as their azhara. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Hey Amud Aleph.